There's a lot that people do not tell you when it comes to grief. There is so much, and you can read all the books you want. You can Google as much as you want, but there are so much little things that you end up having to learn on your own.
That is so true. Hey everyone, this is your girl Yancy, and you're listening to the podcast That's Exciting. The person you just heard is my friend Corbin, with whom I'll be talking with today, as well as my mom. Yes, I'll be having a conversation with my mom near the end of this episode, so be sure to stay tuned, and we'll jump right in the intro of the episode. So today we are talking about a taboo topic in many cultures, a topic that brings a lot of emotions, but also one that I find really interesting because it shows how societies place value on specific things, areas, ways of living. For context, this episode was filmed initially in 2022, and if you've been following the podcast, you know that I had to make this announcement. What's up, lovely humans? It's your host, Yancy, with an announcement to let you know that the podcast is starting the summer break sooner than announced. So the break is effective starting now, and stay tuned on Instagram to know when we'll be coming back with the summer program. So our Instagram is at That's Exciting. That being said, take care of yourself. Take care of your loved ones and tell them that you care. Show them that you care and show them that you love them. Talk soon. Needless to say, a girl was in her feelings. Thank you to my friend Mel Pacifico for that track, because I listened to it on repeat for the whole summer, really. So let me walk you through that period. On May 11th, 2022, we lost my grandmother to cancer. And for anyone who knows me personally, you know that my grandmother has and had such a huge impact on the person that I am today. That's from her after her night shift as a nurse, babysitting me while my dad was going to work during the day, and we would watch Pitsy Pee together. I remember those. Or just teaching me how to overcome my fears. I remember that one time she taught me how to sew with a sewing machine. The way I cried, let me tell you, the way I was scared of sewing my fingers, but despite that, she still showed me how to do it. Even within like those small moments, for me, it was a great lesson that despite the fear, if there's something that you want to do, you can do it. It's a mindset thing. I still cried. I did it anyways. On a sunny afternoon after May 11th, I was mowing the lawn listening to a podcast episode about grief. Well, I wasn't really listening to the podcast, but some of what they were saying prompted some reflections and opened up my curiosity. I found myself curious about my grandfather's experience of losing his lifelong partner. And how does death inform how we navigate relationship, really? And how was the society, if as a society, this taboo around death, and granted, I know that depends culturally, but if that serves us, if we would benefit from openly discussing about death, if we were equipping people on how to navigate, would that make a difference? Or are things okay the way they are right now? Granted, in this episode, I'm not going to go into details and into depth around this, but I am working on doing an episode that talks about that, so stay tuned for that. I like to think of those as big questions, and it brings discomfort. We don't always like to explore those, but I do think that they inform our behavior. And we definitely can unpack that from many different perspectives, from psychology, sociology, sexuality, and many different domains. And I can't do this episode without talking about philosophy, more specifically, my granddad's love for philosophy and Epictetus. Hopefully I pronounced his name right. I never really shied away from asking questions, despite how uncomfortable they might be. And luckily, my granddad has always been up to answering them and teaching me about his favorite philosopher. And we have had many conversations throughout my life around death. More so, me asking, are you afraid of dying? And are you afraid of losing my grandma? And his answers always revolved around this concept. And I have to give credit where credit is due, and I'm reading a Reddit post called How Should a Stoic React to Death of Loved Ones? As I think it really encapsulates what my grandfather has taught me, shared with me around losing loved ones. We do not own anything. Everything is simply borrowed, including loved ones. They were given to us by nature, and they will eventually return to nature. Such is the way of life, an ever-rotating cycle of life and death. And when asked those questions around death, my grandfather always lets me know that all relationships have an end. All things in life really have an end. But specifically for relationships, there's separations and there's death. And despite the discomfort, despite the fears, when you think about losing a loved one, this can also inform you on how to live in the present moment and how you want and you choose to show up and spend time with those people and be with them. So that's always something that he has taught me, and it's something that he shared when my grandmother was ill as well, when we had that conversation. So that culmination of conversations, of reflection around death, of my grandfather's philosophical teachings about his perspectives of relationships and death brings us back to that one day, that one sunny afternoon after May 11th, when I was mowing the lawn, listening, but not really, to a podcast about grief. I thought about my friend Corbin. And Corbin and I met in April 2021 at Shan Booty's Happy Main Character Retreat, and we were put in the same team. Now, shout out to Lauren Morrison for putting those teams together, because our team immediately bonded. If I had to choose one thing that Corbin and I have in common, it is definitely our sense of humor. Laughing is a stress relief, and for me, it can be a coping mechanism and a way to not take things too seriously and navigate difficult conversations, but that's something my therapist might debate. So although this episode is a heavy topic that's anchored in reality, you will hear Corbin and I, and also my mom and I, near the end of the episode, laugh. And laugh at times and in places where you wouldn't necessarily crack a joke, but I guess that's a part of our humor, which you could qualify as dark humor. Also, it's a part of our approach to hardships and how we move through our journey. And that's something that I'm taking from my grandma and that I will carry for the rest of my life. So Corbin and I talked about her experience and her grieving journey. And I also sat down later on with my mom to discuss her experience of suddenly losing her husband to a car accident, and also talked about her own death.
It will arrive when it will arrive.
Yeah, you keep saying that thing. I'm not afraid of dying. I'm afraid of suffering.
Yeah.
It's tough.
No, it's tough. As it's life, you know?
I hate that answer, but it's true.
Mais c'est la réalité, tu sais.
Yeah.
Without further ado, we are going to jump in today's episode, starting with our icebreaker, Corvin's sexual green flags.
For the new listeners, sexual green flags are indicators that you'll have pleasurable, consensual, and safe sex.
Do you feel like your sexual green flags evolved through your journey when you were married and now as a widow?
Yes. Now I've had to label and pinpoint what they are. Because before, I was with my husband for 7 years. So it's like, I guess we already had them, just we didn't have them like established or like defined. And so now it's like I've actually had to define them and figure out like what they are.
So that in itself must have been a journey also.
It's been interesting. It's been a roller coaster, a huge learning experience. goes along with like having to kind of relearn who I am.
Mm-hmm. Would you mind sharing with us like one new green flag that you discovered?
Definitely how they treat other people out in public, like how, like if you go to dinner, how they treat the waitresses, and definitely like communication. Like if we have a very open communication where I feel like I can voice anything and everything.
how would you define yourself? Would you say that you are a widow, or would you say you lost your husband, or does terminology have any impact, or any does it make a difference for you?
It doesn't really make a difference for me, but I think I usually define myself as a widow more than anything.
Is there like a particular reason why you gravitate towards that label?
Probably just because it's like, I guess, short, sweet, and simple. We're kind of wrapping it up, like, versus being like, oh, I lost my spouse, like, kind of spelling out. It's just,
right.
I guess when you sit there and when you say, like, have to sit there and say, like, I lost my spouse, it kind of seems a little bit gloomy versus when you're just like, oh, I'm a widow.
I feel like if you just say it brief, they keep pushing sometimes.
Yeah. When you say widow, it's just like, okay. They're like, I'm sorry.
Death really has no age. I think this is a misconception that people our age or like younger may have.
And it's definitely not. My husband's 29. Like, it doesn't matter. Death is just like, yeah, you just gotta roll with whatever life throws at you.
Typically, what are people's reaction when they learn that you lost your husband?
Shock and surprise. They'll usually sit there and say that they're sorry. Sometimes they'll ask like what happened or how long we were married for. I have gotten a few not so great, lovely reactions though sometimes, which unfortunately that does happen.
Can we elaborate on those?
I've had someone who their reaction was, there's no way, you're too young to be a widow. Which to some people it might not sound like bad, but to me, it definitely felt like a punch in the stomach because it doesn't matter my age. It doesn't matter how old he was. It still happened and that's just life. And their widow's a whole lot younger than me. So people say some stuff and you learn to have to take that and not say the first thing that comes to your mind with it. Cause unfortunately it does happen. From a lot of like other widows, you get some comments where that would surprise you, that people, they don't care how it makes you feel. They just say whatever comes to mind.
If we think about the unavoidable question of, oh, well, you know, what happened? How did you pass away? How do you feel about this question now? And has that sentiment evolved?
Now I'm fine with it. If someone asks, I have no problem telling them what happened. Because I'm at acceptance. Mm-hmm. is why like I'm okay with sitting there talking about it. In the beginning, I don't even think I really talked about it in the beginning. I don't think I could talk about it. Because I think in the beginning, me talking about it meant me just reliving everything in my head of what happened. Like I could vividly picture what happened.
Now is 6 years later?
Now it will be 6 years in December.
Can you share with us what happened?
It was a car accident. He was coming home from work and got in a car accident about 7 minutes from my house. Two-person car accident. The other person walked away fine. No injuries. Unfortunately, he died on impact. So that was at like 3 a.m. And I didn't find out till 8 a.m. I was at work. I had the cops sit there and call me asking me, was last time I spoke with my husband, was last time I saw him. And they sat there and asked me when I would be coming home. I told them like I'm at work, so I would be for like 8 hours. They told me that they would come and meet me. They would come to my job. And I asked them what happened. They would not say anything. And then finally, a couple hours later, I get a call that they're up at the front office. We go into a private room and they tell me that he passed. I didn't believe them. I asked them again what happened. I told them that they were lying. And after that, all I remember is just me crying and me basically running outside, just sitting on the ground in the cold, crying because I couldn't handle it. Like I was hot and I just needed to get out of the room. And my best friends, they worked with me at the time. So they came out and they sat with me outside in the rain for a while.
Okay, that's good. You had support.
Yeah, I am very, very thankful that they both worked with me. I literally told the cops to go get them, sit there and find both my best friends. The cop even had to, I gave the cop my phone, told them to call my in-laws because I could not. And I told them to call my mom. And my mom's actually in jury duty. So they had to text my mom from my phone on what happened. And at the time, my boss was a widower. So I remember we were back in the conference room and he was in there and my managers were in there and everybody from HR was in there. So there was a ton of people in the room.
Yeah, that sounds like a lot. Everybody comes in, tries to comfort you. And it's, yeah, that's the lot.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, because it was 2 hours, I think, I had to wait for them to sit there. And I even called them back at one point and told them, like, hey, so what happened? They weren't telling me anything. It didn't even come across my mind that that's what happened. I'd called my mom and my mother-in-law to see if, like, she had heard from him. And for her, that crossed her mind because they wouldn't tell me anything. So she had a feeling that that was why. But it's, you go crazy thinking what in the world could it possibly be that they won't tell you what happened. And yeah, definitely having everybody be in the room. Like that's, I think that's why I also kept running in and out. One, because I was like, I was burning up and it was just so many people around me, everybody trying to comfort me, which I am thankful for that. But at the same time, it was
overwhelming.
Yeah. And all I wanted was just to be outside and to just have my best friends, because they weren't trying to ask me anything. They weren't trying to say anything. They were just holding me and just letting me cry.
When someone is grieving, you're also confronted with how other people, the thing that we're talking about on the phone, where it's like, well, let me rationalize this. So, oh, but actually he's in a better place. He's not suffering, all of that. Or like, you're going to find somebody else. You're going to have a good life. I don't need to hear that right now, especially not right now.
Exactly. Like those, yeah. And they'll ask you, oh, what is it that you need? What can I get for you? And I don't know what I need. You can't bring them back.
There's that too.
There's nothing you do to bring them back. There's nothing you can do to take away the pain. I don't know. Just sit down. Don't say anything. And just be there. Like that helps so much more than anything you can possibly say.
Yeah. And oftentimes people don't say the right things.
If
I'm being honest.
Point, yeah. Unfortunately, so it's like at that point, it's just, yeah, just don't say, I'd rather you not say anything and just be present for me. You being silent, being present so much than, yeah, you saying something that is hurtful to me.
Also, one that I've learned is if you don't know how to show up, tell me, hey, I really don't know what to say, but I'm sorry that this happened and I sympathize with you. If you don't know what to say, just say you don't know what to say.
I wish more people would do that.
Or don't tell me, hey, if you need something, I'm here.
And then disappear. Yeah. You're already going through this loss and so you're already hurt. And then having to realize that there are certain people who you thought were there for you who aren't, that's even more hurtful. So it's just pain on top of pain. Because you kind of start looking around of like, okay, who actually is there for me? Who can I actually lean on to be okay with being vulnerable around them, be okay with expressing that I am hurt and not have to worry about them judging me or giving me advice on how I should or shouldn't handle it. It's just, yeah, I'd rather you sit there and just tell me that you're sorry than to you basically to lie and be like, if you need anything, let me know.
Yeah, because also it's a disservice to themselves in a way that if you know that you don't have the capacity to show up for me, don't lie to me. Just be honest with yourself.
Yeah, I'd rather let me know. If you do not have the space or the emotional bandwidth to be there for me, just let me know.
At least I know we can take it. Maybe certain people are going, what?
Yeah.
Let's talk about showing up and let's talk about supporting someone who is actively grieving. And let me be really blunt and honest. This is fucking awkward. Being there for someone, not knowing what to say, not knowing if what we're saying is the right thing, wanting to help, but those things are helping sometimes, but not helping. We can feel tongue-tied and we can feel like we're not helping at all when the person just wants someone to be there for them. So These are awkward situations. They can be awkward situations, but it don't need to be when you have the right tools to navigate them. So let's start with things not to say to someone who's grieving. These are generalizations, so it will depend from people to people. The goal is just to be conscious of what we say and equip ourselves with the best tools. And sometimes we will say those things not to say. I know I've personally been guilty of saying some of those things because I didn't know how to handle that situation. It's not about being perfect, it's just about trying to be there for the person that's actively grieving. Oh my God, I could never handle what you're going through. I've personally heard that one, especially during the pandemic, because there was a time where I lost a person to COVID or COVID-related complications once a week for almost 5 weeks straight. That was a lot. The second one, which is curiosity and trying to find reassurance. And these can be the same, these can be distinct. So a concrete example, as per the New York Times, is, "I'm so sorry for your loss to lung cancer. Did he smoke?" So you see, there is this morbid curiosity, and I think it's natural and normal to want to know what people pass away from. But there can also be, on that flip side, say you are a smoker yourself, you might be seeking that reassurance that it wasn't that, because that's something that might affect you directly. And I get that we're curious, but also trying to think of timing and centering the person and not yourself in that moment, because the person is dealing with the loss of someone. Now, the commonly known toxic positivity, or the bright side. And I get that we want to be a source of positivity. We want to cheer people up. We want to be the light when they're crushing darkness. But that's not always helpful, especially when your sentences start with "at least." Things like "at least you're alive," or "at least they didn't die of X," or one that I've personally been guilty of, and I think it can be context specific depending on the person and the relationship you have, "at least they're not suffering anymore." The next one is being careful with religion, because not everyone that you will support or be there for, one, believe in the same things that you do, second, believe in the same religion, or have the same spiritual beliefs as you do. And of course, this is people in context specific, but if you don't have access or know if the person is religious or share the same faith as you do, try to steer clear from "this was God's plan, they're in heaven," or "that was the universe's plan, the universe does things how the universe does them," or things around that nature can feel very insensitive. Again, depends on relationship, depends on timing, and depends on many things, so use your best judgment. And lastly, telling people how they should feel or how they should be. Try and steer away from those in, I think, any situations, really, because if I'm having a full-blown anxiety attack, you telling me, "oh, just breathe, you'll be fine," it's not going to help my anxiety attack. When you're grieving, someone telling me, "be strong," or "don't be sad," or "you'll be fine," or "it's going to pass," is not helpful. We've covered things not to say, and I encourage you to do your own research. But now let's talk about ways to support someone who's grieving. I'm referring to an article from Harvard.eu that I will link in the show notes. Name names. Don't be afraid to mention the deceased. It won't make your friend or the person any sadder, although it might prompt some tears. Don't ask "how are you" if you're not ready to have an honest answer. I personally found it helpful when friends and people reached out to ask me how I was feeling on that day, because some days I was sad, some days I was angry, and some days I just felt numb and I didn't really know or felt anything. Next, reaching out and checking in, because the person that you are showing up for may need you even more after the first few weeks and months when other people may stop calling. When losing a partner or losing someone who's under your care, there's a lot of paperwork that you have to do. There's a lot of things that you'll have to think about, especially for, you know, arrangements, if you have funerals, closing accounts and all that stuff. So that will depend on person to person. So while someone might have a support system that will help them with all of those tasks, other people might take care of all of that by themselves. So reminders in your calendar or on your phone can be a great idea and a great way for you to show up for the person. The article shares helping out, assisting with meals. I personally, it was very helpful when friends reached out and said, did you drink or did you eat today? Or bringing meals, sending Uber Eats, sending DoorDash, like being there for the person and helping them with their basic needs, if that makes any sense. At least in my experience, that definitely has helped. The last one that I will share is avoiding judgment. You might not react the same way the person is reacting, and that's okay. Just be there and listen. Engage in active listening instead of advising.
That was one thing I did hate, was having someone constantly, every single day, people asking, how are you today? How are you? And in the beginning, I would lie and be like, oh, I'm good. I'm okay. And I remember my mother-in-law and my therapist saying, being like, why don't you just be honest? Tell the truth. Why are you lying? And I started being honest and be like, yo, I'm bad. I'm shitty. I'm horrible. And people get really uncomfortable with that. But it's like, that's my truth.
But you ask the question. They ask the question. So if you don't want to have an honest answer, especially given the circumstances that I'm currently in, don't ask the question.
You know exactly what's going on and you ask.
Exactly.
You ask the question. People stop. Yes. Some people stop answering after a while, asking after a while, which I'm like, thank you, because I didn't want you asking.
Yep. I know I can be guilty of like, how are you doing today? Is your heart and your soul okay? Like, nah. So sometimes I may be like the person that asks that a lot because I care, but it's a learning. I know through going through what I've been through with my grandma, I've learned a lot on how people show up, but also how I show up for people.
Oh yeah.
Is that something that you've also noticed for you?
Yeah. I'm definitely, when it comes to someone going through something painful or a loss, I might ask them like how they're doing, and I'm like, how are you really doing? How are you honestly doing? Like I'm asking because I want to know. I don't want you to sugarcoat it. I want you to be okay with giving me a real raw answer. Like, if you need to talk about, like, I am here for you. I am. And I mean that. And everybody who I say it to, they know I mean it, because I'm not saying it to every single person. I'll sit there and I'll ask them, you know, have you eaten today? Have you drank anything today? Did you even sleep? Like, how have you been sleeping at all?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. It's those little things that you realize do count.
They do. The basics, and I'm doing quote unquote, showering, eating, drinking water, sleeping. Yo, all
just
of them.
Getting out of bed.
Those can all like jump out the window when you're not doing all right.
And it's like, because you don't want to.
And it's not because you don't want to.
I mean, my mother-in-law and my mom literally had to force me to drink and eat that like for a while because I wasn't. So yeah, like that is something simple. You sit there and ask someone, have you eaten or have you drank any water? It can go so far.
If we like talk about, there's nothing linear about grief or healing. Like there's truly nothing linear in life.
At all.
So, you know, it fluctuates and sometimes it hits you and you're like, oh, I thought it was over. Or I thought I was okay.
Life's like, no.
I think that knowing the steps of grieving is like a good reference point, but it's also, it has to be a constant reminder for yourself to know that, well, one day you may be at anger and the next day you may more leans towards acceptance and go back to sadness.
I went through a whole lot of anger, a level of anger that I didn't even know I could get to. Sadness was that, of course, that's a huge one. I do think that people don't really, when they talk about like stages of grief, they don't really explain it right. Because sometimes you'll see like the little chart with that goes into a circle, or you'll see it where it's like, oh, straight line. It's like, no. You will go back and forth between anger, sadness, acceptance, denial. Like you'll go back to anger, then you'll go back to acceptance. Like you're all over the place. I guess process each and every one and be okay with being in each and every one. Because I went back and forth between that anger, sadness, and denial for such a long time. And I think it was at 3 years, I thought I was okay. I thought I was at acceptance and I was good. That was such a lie. I was lying to myself so badly. And I actually, I'm no longer angry. I didn't know that. But I was also still in denial and sadness. So I was in denial that I wasn't okay.
Okay. Okay. I see.
Yeah. So it's not just you being in denial about losing that person and not being there. It's being you being okay with that you're not okay. And you having to admit yourself that I am not okay. I'm still grieving. Having to admit that is the hardest thing.
Are you familiar with meta emotions?
Mm-mm. What is that?
Meta emotions are emotions about your emotions. And so if you hate being angry, you're going to feel a type of way about the feeling of anger. Do you feel like that's something that you've gone through with the stages?
Ooh. With certain things, definitely depending on what, like my anger, definitely depending on what my anger was geared towards and whether I was okay with it or not. Mm. Because, and honestly, it is a lot to make me angry. So I've never really been an angry person, but to have that sort of anger that I had to where I was angry at the world. I was angry at God. I was angry at Michael for leaving, like for not being here, for dying. So it's like, I hated the fact that I was mad at Michael for dying because he didn't have a choice.
Right.
Like he didn't choose to, but it's like having to be okay with that I am okay, that I am mad because I miss him. Like you having to figure out like why you have these sort of emotions that's definitely a huge part of a process of trying to figure out, okay, yeah, you're sad, but it's like, what specifically are you sad about? Yeah, you're mad, but what specifically are you mad about? And I think that's what kind of helped me process each and every emotion. Now I can honestly say that I am at acceptance. I do experience sadness. That's something that I'm always going to experience, but I've accepted that I am going to experience sadness, but I've accepted that this is my life. This is part of my story that this happened. It's kind of crazy to be able to say that now because it took a lot. It took a ton to get me to this point.
In the journey of grief, of grieving a partner, I've read a lot about having to find yourself again. What's been that journey like for you?
In all honesty, yeah, lots and lots of therapy.
The way I felt that, I also feel like it's really great that you had, you know, someone to navigate those emotions because that journey.
And also someone who is not afraid to be honest with you about, hey, you have not accepted this. You are not you're not at acceptance. You are in denial. Being called out on that, that is something that you do. Also, you'll have a ton of different firsts, but it's like certain activities that you love, those become like your first time of doing, like for us, going to concerts was our thing. Every concert I've been to pretty much was with him, especially a lot of like rock shows was who I always went to rock shows with him. I only went to rock shows with him. So that was a part of me kind of getting to know myself was being okay, being comfortable with going to a rock show by myself, accepting the fact that you are not the person that you were before this loss. That is a huge thing with learning who you are now. They're not in your life anymore. And that there's that emptiness is always going to be there. And that pain that you have of losing them is going to be there. And that changes you. Because now you know what that surreal, unbearable pain actually is. So like for me, I mean, I knew what pain was, but I didn't know just how bad and how much pain I could actually experience after losing Michael. I never knew that type of pain existed, pretty much. So I'm not the same. Because the girl before had this naiveness that, oh, we're going to live to be 80. We're young. We're invincible. This is my whole life planned out with this person. I had to let that go. I had to sit there and come to realization of I'm not that girl. I don't have this naiveness anymore. I am very much aware that death is real and death does not care.
Because it's also not just grieving the person, but it's grieving the plans, it's grieving the future, it's grieving the dreams, the goals that you were sharing with that person.
That's a hard thing too. That is a really, really hard thing. And having to grieve who you were and having to grieve your future or what you thought your future was, those are two things that I did not know, I did not realize, and I did not realize how hard they were going to be. And I remember having this conversation with someone because I was angry about the fact that I didn't get the future that I thought I was going to have. And they had to sit there and they pretty much told me, they're like, you're right where you're supposed to be. What if what you thought your future was to be was not actually what your future is going to be? And that's kind of like a, that's also like a punch.
That's a tough one to swallow.
It's ego, because you have to sit there and you have to accept the fact like, okay, yes, I have this plan, but it's like, that plan is not your plan. It's hard. But that, and I think that also comes with, that goes along with the same thing of trying to relearn who you are. Who are you without them? There's a lot that people do not tell you when it comes to grief. There is so much, and you can read all the books you want. You can Google as much as you want, but there are so much little things that you end up having to learn on your own.
We will be right back after this break. And this is your cue to take out your phone, open Instagram, and give the podcast a follow at That's Exciting. Also, while you're at it, take a time to rate the podcast and let me know what you think. When it comes to sexual pleasure, there's nothing I hated more than the feeling of drying out lube and the process of having to find a compatible and enjoyable lube for my silicone toys. If that's your case, Sutil is the perfect lube for you. I've been using Sutil Lux for the past 2 years, and let me tell you, the texture is amazing. It is so silky and really pleasurable, so I'm not changing my lube anytime soon. Sutil is a water-based, paraben, and glycerin-free pH balance, that's very important, lube made with the finest botanical, eco-certified ingredients. Made by two Canadian women who understand the whys, what's, and hows, they offer Sutil in deluxe and rich formats, optimal for any type of play. Perfect with condoms and your favorite toys. Enhance your experiences today. For luxurious and silky pleasure, choose Sutil.
That's one thing I think definitely, especially with widowhood, that people don't talk about is, it's like this time thing. If you start dating too soon, that's a big deal. Whenever you feel like you're ready to get back out there, and it varies from person to person. And it's like, you might not be ready, but you decide that you want to try and test it out. You don't know, but you'll have other people kind of judge you. People who haven't been through what you've gone through. Who have no idea how you feel and what you're like, they will judge you. Also, the concept of like dating or remarrying, when people sit there and say stuff like, oh, you either love your spouse who passed or you love your new spouse. Like, that is, it's one. You only have love for one. It's like, no, that's not the case. I still love my spouse who passed, but I can also love this new person and I love them differently. I love both. They're two different people. I have two different type of love for them. I was a different person than I was with this person, and I'm a different person now. Like the whole thing with first loves, how everybody talks about, you always have your first love. And how many times your first love is not necessarily the person that you married. Mm-hmm. You don't cancel out the fact that you did love this person.
Yeah, that makes sense. Also want to switch gears and ask you the question. So how is dating like for you after the passing of Michael? Did you ease into it or... I am listening.
It's awkward. Oh, it was so awkward and weird. I met Michael when I was 18. He passed when I was 25. That is 7 years that I was just with this one person, and I didn't really date much before him. And so he passed when I was 25, and when I decided, okay, let me see if I am possibly ready or not. It was like a whole other thing. It was a whole other game. It's like, they're dating apps. Like, what? I was like, what are dating apps? Like, what? Wait. I was like, so we don't do the whole meeting someone in person anymore? I was like, what? What in the world?
Right.
You have to figure out if you're even ready for this. Because from a lot of other ones that I've talked to, when we do kind of start, it's a thing where we know emotionally, we cannot give everything. Like, we are not all there. So if anything, we just date just to see if we're okay, or date just for fun, or we might think that we're ready to try and date and get into a relationship and turn out like we're not. So it is a very messy process. And it's also a weird thing of navigating how to tell people, Because you always get those questions of, why are you single?
Do you feel like it changes the way they interact with you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wish I could say no, but it definitely does. I've had it where there are some people who they just find it so uncomfortable and they can't get past it. And I think that's a very hard thing, like with being a widow and trying to date, is you have to constantly kind of check yourself and make sure you are not comparing everybody else to your spouse. That is a very hard thing to try and not compare them to. And then I've had other widows say the same thing of, you get a person who they compare themselves to your spouse, even though you don't. I do hold Michael on a pedestal, but I don't compare everybody else to him because nobody can compare to Michael. Nobody is Michael. So I can't, that's unfair for me to compare them, but it's like, why are you comparing yourself to him? You're not him. You're not going to be him. I don't want you to be him. That's definitely a frustrating thing. You also get some people who they'll sit there and say like, oh, you need to get over it or you need to move on. And it's, like I said, it is messy. So you have to, and it's like, you got to find someone who's okay with the fact of, yeah, I was married and I did lose my spouse. And if they were still alive, yeah, I most likely would still be with them. They have to be okay with that, that you are always going to love them, that they're always going to have a place in your heart and they're always going to have a place in your life, and that you did have a life with them, and that you are going to have your moments where you do think about this person and you're going to be sad. Like, you're going to have dates, like your wedding anniversary, their birthday. Mm-hmm. I think it's the thing, they have to be comfortable in themselves and know, like, me being sad, it has nothing to do with you.
Right. I also think that your experience speaks to how we feel around death and how we don't talk about it. And I don't think that's serving us.
You know, people die, but you don't want to, nobody wants to admit that. No one wants to talk about it, even though they know. Like, that is, like, Michael's not afraid of death. It didn't scare him. Me, I was afraid of it. So that's why we never talked about it, because I was so terrified of it. I like the fact that, yeah, everything has an end. I think if you go into that, you'd be okay with that. That will change how you navigate your relationships with the people around you, because you are aware of, like, hey, yeah, you might not be here one day. Mm-hmm. However, that for whatever reason that is, you might not. So let me cherish our relationship. Yeah. Even with knowing that Michael's going to pass, I wouldn't change anything. Mm-hmm. Like, I am very, very thankful and very, very lucky relationship that I had with him. I got to spend 7 years of my life with him, and I wouldn't change that for anything.
That's really beautiful. Cherishing and celebrating life is also having a mush pit at a funeral, which is what happened at Michael's funerals. Am I right?
Yes.
I think that is awesome, and I just love that. This is remembering him for him and his love for hardcore music. That is a true celebration of life.
I am so glad that my brother-in-law came up with the idea. And when they asked me if I was okay with that, I was in tears, because that is exactly what he would have wanted. Exactly what he would have wanted. He wouldn't have wanted everybody crying, everybody sad. He wouldn't want a big mosh pit. That's how he lived his life. I think everybody should look at funerals like that. Like, celebrate how the person would have wanted to, celebrate how they lived. Michael loved mosh pits. And so having a mosh pit of his friends, like, at his funeral, he would have freaking loved that. If people also looked at it as, yeah, celebrating that person, but also it could help you.
Thank you, Corbin, for coming on the podcast and having this open, honest, and vulnerable conversation around losing people in our lives and losing loved ones. I do have to say, putting myself back in my 2022 shoes, that conversation did help me process my grief with my grandmother. So I am forever grateful to you. Last but certainly not least, I sit down with my mom to talk about death, to talk about her relationship with death, being that she grew up on a dairy farm, so death was something that she grew up with, also losing her mom at a very young age. And she also lost her husband. Similar to Corbin, it was a car accident. And before I was even an idea, really, my mom was married to her late husband and had a beautiful, annoying son my brother. And years down the line, she met my dad and I was born. We talk about what that journey was like for her, but we also talk about her own mortality. So without further ado, let's jump right in. Hi, Mom.
Hi, my dear.
How are you?
Good.
You're from a family of six. The youngest girl?
Yeah, I have two sisters older than me, two brothers older than me, and one younger than me.
You also grew up on a dairy farm, which you had proximity to death from a very young age.
Yes.
How would you define society's relationship with death?
It depends of where you are from.
So where we're at now in Canada, how do you feel that people deal with death?
Yeah, depends of the age of the person who died. When it's an older person, you know she will. This person will die. Yeah, right. You expect it.
Okay. So you would say that how our society moves around death would depend on who the person was, their age, and all that stuff.
Yeah, it's like I told you before. You born, you live, and you die.
Right. So you have a very, I would say, pragmatic approach.
Yeah.
Do you think that this has been influenced by you growing up on the farm?
Maybe, because we saw a lot of different kind of death, like animals.
And you also lost your mom at a young age. Do you think that that had an impact on you?
I think yes, because she was very sick. I saw her very sick. It's just the way they inform us. My aunt came home and she said, your mom is dead.
And that's it?
And that's
it. How old were you?
8 years old, around 8 years old.
Mm-hmm. That's intense. I don't think I know what really happened with Carl's dad.
It was the last Stanley Cup of the Canadian of Montreal.
What date was that?
The Stanley Cup, it's a hockey.
No, what date was that?
The 9th of June, 1993.
I don't know why. I always thought it was on New Year's Eve or something.
No.
I don't know where that comes from.
Then he went to see his friends. So when he came back, he has a face.
He had a face-to-face?
Face-to-face, and he died instantly.
Instantly?
Mm-hmm. Instantly. He died instantly. So at 5 o'clock in the morning, the police came here. And when you see the police and you don't see your husband in the bed, you say, oh, something wrong happened. The police went to the neighbor. The neighbor came here. So I called his sister. Then Lynn called her aunt, Cécile. And Cécile went to Drummondville to see Madame Saint-Pierre and to told her that Eve was as an accident.
To break the news.
Yeah.
And why did the neighbor get involved?
Because the police, they won't leave me alone.
Oh, they wanted you to have support.
Yeah.
Okay. Comment ça a été, quoi ta réaction? Did you...
The first thing is I put a paper on the table and a pen and write what I think. Okay, I called in. Okay.
Oh, you made a to-do list.
A to-do list to be sure that if I have something in my mind, I will write that. Not to be organized, just to be sure I won't forget something or...
Yeah, because they say that when somebody passes away, you don't get to grieve because you have to do paperwork, you have to do this, you have to do that, you have to do that.
Yeah, you have to identify them too.
You went to identify him?
Yeah, I went to la morgue. Comment on appelle
ça? I think the morgue. You went to the morgue?
Well, yeah, yes, and... It's his father identified him, but I asked the coroner, I would like to see him. I was not able after that to see him because he's a cremation. So
it was like your last goodbye?
Yeah, just to see the last time.
Was it difficult to see?
Yes, but in his face, it was peaceful.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Was he disfigured?
No.
Okay.
No, he received the steering in his chest.
Mm-hmm.
But they put a sheet.
Okay.
And I just saw his face.
Okay. And by that time, did you have time to like process, grieve, cry?
No. I cry, yes. But process is fast. Là, you, then Madame Saint-Pierre came and she was like a zombie.
Mm.
His father was affected. They said, when you lost a child, it's more difficult than your mom, because your mom, you expect she will die,
mm-hmm.
but not your child.
I don't like to think about you dying. It makes me want to cry. Have you thought about your death?
I know I will die. But it will arrive when it will arrive.
Yeah, you keep saying that thing. I'm not afraid of dying. I'm afraid of suffering.
Yeah.
It's tough.
No, it's tough. It's life, you know?
I hate that answer, but it's true.
Mais c'est la réalité, tu sais.
Yeah. Is there anything special you want us to do for your funerals? I did an interview with my friend and they did a mosh pit for her husband.
No, I hope the person will have fun, like not have fun, in peace, be in peace with the situation and be in peace with her own death.
Have you thought about your own death, like younger and now? And
not really, no. Like I told you, just I don't want to suffer.
Mm-hmm. Is it a biohazard if we cremate you and put you in a garden?
Yeah, it's not bothering me.
It's what? It's not, it doesn't bother you?
Well, no. I was... You know, when you die after that, my ashes, you will put that in my garden and the carrots you will eat will be me.
I don't want to do that anymore. I don't want to do that anymore.
But like their incarnation is that. You know, like animals, they died. Decomposition. They give some nutriment to the soil. To the soil.
And then that.
Yeah, it's that.
Okay, so you're saying that it's more so the cycle of life is death, decomposition, then life again, then death.
Yeah.
Okay. Ben, pensez qu'il y a d'autres choses après, c'est correct aussi.
Mm-hmm.
Parce que ça veut, tu sais, pour certaines personnes, ça, like for certain people, it does help them
to live
and to also be okay with death.
Yeah, man, it's more to live, to have a reason to live, because you live, then you die, then after that you will have a eternal life.
You don't want that?
I know.
Have you ever thought about us, Carl and I, dying?
No. No, and I hope I will die before you. Just that.
I hope I die before everybody else dies. No. I don't want to see people die. I don't want to deal with that. I don't want to lose you.
Mm.
It's very selfish, though. Yet again, the stoic approach to death and the cycle or circle of life came back with my mom's perception around death. My hopes for this episode was to create a moment in time, a stamp in time to commemorate the ones we love and the ones we've lost. And I'm currently looking at a photo of my grandma that's bringing a lot of emotions. And I hope that I was able to do that. I hope that... I hope that I was able to commemorate her and the impact that she has had on me and many other people. And also, in memory of Corbin's late husband, Michael, my mom's late husband, Eve, her mom who passed away, Rachel, and to you listening right now, you might be grieving someone who passed, you might be supporting someone who's going through that, or you might just be curious about the topic of death. And I hope that this episode was able to provide valuable information. Now, pour yourself a glass of water because, honey, it is time for honesty hour. I ain't gonna lie, bitch. This has been one of the most difficult podcast episode I've ever had to work on, even projects. And that's because of the emotional tax. I didn't think about that, but talking about death, putting yourself actively in spaces or conversations that are uncomfortable, exploring them with curiosity and not letting my desire to shut down and tears and go in the shower and crawl in a ball with R&B music. It's been a heck of a journey. But honestly, I'm super grateful and I'm so fascinated. This is a really interesting thing. I'm super fascinated with the fact that I can revisit that conversation that happened 2 years ago on July 2022 when it was 3 months after my grandmother passed away. Now, I don't know if you do this, but if you have like a journal or if you leave notes on your phone or even record yourself ranting or processing things on your phone and you revisit them, there is an active exercise of not judging yourself, which is fucking hard. But it's when you approach it with curiosity, I can see where I was in that place, in that moment in time, and in my grieving journey. And I've observed a lot of, I've observed a lot of resentment, a lot of anger, but most importantly, sadness. And that was specifically geared towards how people showed up, like how certain people in my life that were super important to me showed up, which was either not existent or caused more stress than I really needed at that time. And that material didn't make the cut. It surely did not, but shoot me a message on Instagram and let me know if I should release it or not, if you're still listening to this right now. The podcast is at That's Exciting, or you can leave a review. Like, let me know if I should release that. Shameless plug, of course. But I'm super grateful for that experience. Despite the emotional tax, despite revisiting things that are really uncomfortable and difficult and things that I quite honestly haven't processed yet, I'm still in the process of coming to terms with death. And I fucking hate this. But then again, it gives meaning to life and to how we navigate our relationships. And that goes back to what I was saying earlier in a podcast. This can be explored in so many different ways and through so many different lenses. And I think it gets really interesting when intersectionality is mixed in. And you can see from a sociological perspective that's tied with sexuality, that's also tied with people that are aging, that all of that, I think, is super fascinating, especially when it comes to relationships and sexuality and how that informs how we navigate them. So yeah, a bitch is tired and I'm probably gonna go to sleep or cry. I'll try and cry and let it out because I think that's gonna do a lot of good. So aside from saying that grief is a motherfucker, I don't really know what else to say. Grief is not a linear process. It's not the same experience from the griefs that you'll experience in life. And you're also not alone. There's a lot of support out there and resources that can help you navigate grief or help someone or support someone and be there for someone who is navigating grief. So I put some resources in the show notes. Also, this is the longest episode that I've ever done. Yay! So, my final words. I just realized, no, that's not a pun. In conclusion, death is really a celebration of life and how we choose to remember the ones that we loved, the ones that were in our lives, and the ones that we lost. Take care of yourself. Take care of your loved ones. Actually, just call them right now. Take your phone, call them, text them. Let them know that you heard this amazing podcast episode by Yancy Sherry called That's Exciting. Just shoot them the link their way. You know, shameless plug here. We shall connect on social media at That's Exciting on Instagram and at That's Exciting on TikTok. And until next month.
That's exciting. Yeah, yeah.
or relieve. On production team, recording, editing, and sound design by yours truly, myself, Yancy. Special thanks to Hannah Oliver for her assistance on production. That's Exciting Anthem by Calder Nash and the amazing vocals by Mel Pacifico. That's it for the episode. In the meantime, stay curious, because that's exciting.